The Obama administration links the Iran deal and the role of the dollar in the global economy.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LegalZoom, supporting small businesses with formations, corporate filings, and independent contract and tax advice. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. And by Regis, providing temporary workspace so that businesses can work where they want, when they want, and how they want. Regis, here to help you grow. More information at 1-800-OFFICES.
From Marketplace, I'm Noelle King, and for David Brancaccio, President Obama is one vote shy of the 34 votes he needs in the Senate to solidify his Iran nuclear deal. Obama won the support of two Senate Democrats yesterday. Secretary of State John Kerry will make a speech about the deal in Philadelphia today. Kerry has argued that if the U.S. nixes the deal, it could cause tensions with the six other world powers that signed on. Kerry said that could undermine U.S. economic power and even erode the dollar's status as the world's go-to currency. We're here with Jeffrey Frankel. He's a professor of capital formation and growth at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. Professor, what was Kerry suggesting might happen?
He was raising an issue, which I hadn't thought about before, and I think most people hadn't, that if Congress were to reject the Iran deal, and if we were to try to pursue sanctions after that without the participation of the other major countries in the world who said they wouldn't participate, then the only way to do it would be to cut off some other countries like China from the U.S. financial system, and that would, you know, causing them to look elsewhere than the dollar and the U.S. financial markets for doing their business.
Why is it important to our economy that the dollar remains the global reserve currency?
It's one aspect of being a leader of the leader of the world's financial and monetary system. It's got a number of advantages. One advantage is I don't think we would have been able to finance our current account deficits, our trade deficits, spending more than we're earning, which we've been doing since 1982. So that's over 30 years. I don't think if we were some other country, we would have been able to finance those current account deficits so easily. We've been able to do it because the rest of the world wants to hold dollars.
Jeffrey Frankel is a professor at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. Thanks so much, Professor.
Sure thing.
Let's take a look at some numbers. Major European markets are mixed right now. The DAX in Germany is trading up 0.1%. The FT in London is flat. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 0.6% range. Walmart, the country's biggest retailer, is cutting hours for workers at an undisclosed number of stores across the country. The move comes just a few months after the retail giant raised its minimum wage to $9 an hour. Sally Herships has a story.
Walmart has been having a problem. Customers don't like waiting.
The number one complaint people have about Walmart is, it takes too long to give you my money.
Charles Fishman is author of The Walmart Effect, How the World's Most Powerful Company Really Works. He says the way you fix that problem is by having more workers at the checkout line. But more hours for workers who've just been given raises can create another problem.
It's more expensive to pay people more, at least at the start.
Walmart's planning to spend an additional $1 billion a year on wages, but says at the same time it needs to control costs. And that includes trimming workers' hours in a small number of stores that have gone over budget. Enrico Moretti teaches economics at the University of California. He says Walmart is trying to reinvent itself.
From a low-margin, low-profit, very cheap store to one where customer experience is better.
But that costs money. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Avalara, tax automation for businesses of all sizes. Avalara's cloud-based technology is designed to simplify business tax by performing real-time tax calculations and enabling automatic return filing. Learn more at avalara.com. And by Zillow, with homes for sale, historical pricing data, and photos available on Zillow.com or on their mobile apps. Zillow, find your way home. Marketplace's Asia coverage is supported in part by the Star Foundation.
Today, September 2nd, is the 70th anniversary of the formal surrender of Japan that ended World War II. Central to the war effort here at home were war bonds. The U.S. sold more than $150 billion worth of bonds to help fund the war and fight inflation. Today, we hear from a gentleman named Ken McGee, who sold war bonds as a child.
I'm Ken McGee, B. Kenneth McGee, 84 years old, live in the middle of the woods, near a little crossroads, which is called Centerville, North Carolina, and it's like in the middle of nowhere. In 1944, I was 13 years old. My dad was Irish Catholic, my mother was Jewish, and my dad had very strong feelings about the war. My mother had people in the camps, some which got out, some which didn't. So, of course, we felt very strongly about the war. Dad was really too old to go back in, but he volunteered to go back in. He was gone for probably 2 or 3 years. He was at D-Day in Normandy plus a couple of days. He was in all the major battles. I'll never forget the day the Normandy invasion began. I think my mom and I listened to the radio all night because it was probably about 11, 12 o'clock at night. And I remember listening and wondering if Dad was on that. Those are very, very scary days. I felt that I had to do more than just collect tinfoil, like all the other children were doing, for the war effort. So I went in and volunteered in a war bond effort. And I actually went door to door selling war bonds. And you could do that in those days, a little boy, going door to door. They were $18.75 each. I think maturity date, they were supposed to be $25. I was so thrilled to be doing it. And I think I can still remember the day. I actually sold 10 bonds in one day. I thought I was a hero. But, you know, I think a lot of people were buying those not as an investment, but as really a contribution to the war. You know, in those days, that was our lives. We were consumed by the war. If you weren't at war, you felt like you had to find something to do to contribute, you know.
That was Ken McGee speaking to Marketplace's Sabri Benishore. Coming to you from studios at Montclair State University in New Jersey, I'm Noelle King with the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.